Radio, the transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves on radio frequency, especially those carrying sound messages, or the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public. Fanboy, a male fan, especially one who behaves in an obsessive or overexcited way.
This is the Radio Fanboy Podcast, and here's your host, Bevo.
Another day, another episode of the Radio Fanboy Podcast. This time we're going to Gympie and a station by the name of Zinc 96. This guy's been there for a very long time. He's been doing Drive for quite some time and has just been promoted to do the breakfast show. They're on the search for a breakfast co-host. Everyone, welcome along Bilko from Zinc 96. G'day, Bilko.
Bevo, how are you, my friend? Been a long time.
Hasn't it? It's been a very long time. We were just having a joke off the podcast before talking about, imagine if they put us together, it'd be the most confusing radio show ever. Bilko and Bevo, the two baldies on air with matching South Park ties.
Chrome domes in stereo. That photo does exist somewhere, and I should actually get it to you so you can post it somewhere just to prove that we're not lying. But you and I did work together in the dim, dark past through Hot 91. And
yeah.
How many owners ago was it?
Yeah, I've lost count. I think it was Rob Gamble owned it at the time when I started, and then Prime and Grants and whatever up to now. So
well over 10 years ago, and of course, Grants is a good company to work for and a good family company, and have looked after us during COVID. So we want to repay the favour as hard, staff members. So made a big change to life. I mean, I've been comfortable doing Drive for I think 10 years now, mate, which is probably one of the longest radio gigs I've ever had in one place. I think Aubrey Wodonga was 7 years and about 10 months, or might not have even been that long, but I did miss out on long service leave by about 6 or 7 months. So, damn.
I know. The last thing I remember, you probably still do this at the moment, you hang back quite some time, so many hours after work, and do your music and all the rest of it. You're still doing music? You're still doing that?
Still doing music for the Adult Hits Network, which is part of a group of stations that we run through Grants, but can't do that in breakfast, so I need a worthy successor to take on that job.
Yeah, so what a new MD coming as well.
I assume so, but it could be an internal promotion. I'm not sure where that's going to move yet, but I'm still got the reins of the music at the moment. But breakfast and doing another job sort of doesn't mix, especially when you're starting a new job and you've got to meet clients and you've got to get into the market and down the track finding a new co-host. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I reckon it's a great idea. Someone that's been on the stage for quite some time. You're not exactly unfamiliar with the listeners, so moving to prime time, it makes sense to me.
How wacky do you need to go in breakfast? Do you need to do nudie runs down the main drag?
Bilko. You've done it all.
I haven't done breakfast since B104.9 Aubrey Wodonga, and that would be late 90s, early 2000s when Sally O'Donoghue and Steve Bowen and myself did a three-prong breakfast. So just before, I think, The River started, RG Capital had that, and we're all sweating bricks at that stage, waiting for this new station to come, and they came to the market and, were quite dominant, and certainly, because there hadn't been anything new in Aubrey Wodonga for a long time, they certainly made their mark and, made us work very, very hard. I mean, we were rating 34-35% when we were doing that three-prong brekkie show. Where do you get those sort of figures in markets these days?
Yeah, it's all 90s radio. Like, there wasn't a great deal of competition when you think about it, and you look at things now and it's just, it's split amongst so many different demographics.
All you had was the duopoly there, 2AY, B104.9, and it'd been that way for a long time. I mean, B104.9 was the supplementary license. I went from Wave FM Wollongong, that had just been bought by the Camerons, to start with that company there. I think it was might have been Wesco, and they sold to another company, and eventually I can't remember the company who took them over, but I remember there was a day when we had a lot of staff being cut because of the new ownership, and suddenly you had to take on three or four jobs, and how scary that was. But, this is one of the constants of radio, is that people leave, people come in, you get to know new people, and I suppose this is what I've enjoyed, is the camaraderie. You come across people you've worked with before, you come across new blood, and some people you see again, some you never see, but you do stay in touch with them either online. Like you and I have worked a few years together and still I know what you're up to.
Yeah. Good old Facey, hey? Everyone's keeping up to date what's going on, even though you don't talk, you can see what you're up to, yeah.
You need Facebook. I mean, how else are you going to stay connected now?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Wave FM, you met a very prominent production guru there, didn't you?
Is that the name of Michael Anderson?
Yes,
Ando?
Sidey.
Sidey, of course, Sideshow. Well, I remember Michael as a copywriter, and, you know, I'm not going to lay, you know, claim to discovering him, but let's face it, he was copywriting, he was new to the game. I remember I was doing nights in production to help out Graham McCudden, or Cuddles, who's now retired from Wave FM. I used to jump in the afternoon and put ads together, and he used to write commercials, and when I put them together for him, he'd go, "It's not how I'm seeing it in my head." I go, "What do you mean, Ando?" And he's like, "Look, what do you do? How do you do it?" And he actually got in there and learned himself how to put a commercial together. And I think through that process, he realized this is how I make the scripts come to life. And I let him do it. Can I lay claim to Ando's successful career as Sideshow?
Yeah, sure.
I wouldn't be so bold, Michael.
What was your role at Wave FM when you were there?
I was initially started midnight to dawn. I went from 3SH Swan Hill, where I landed the job. Dave Smith posted the bulletin internally. It was, you know, through the company. And I went up for the interview to Wollongong one time, caught up with my folks down the road, went for the interview. And I remember Dave Smith saying at the time, he goes, "Well, we've had a few, different applicants. You are in the family, so I better give it to you first." So he didn't make it sound as though I was the best talent for the job, just I was in the family. I mean, I was coming from a small station of Swan Hill, but I got the midnight to dawn job for the miraculous price of $31,500 a year, which I thought was fantastic. And I think I ended up doing that maybe for might have been a year, might not have even been quite a year, and then ended up doing the night show. And I became the very last night show for incorrect. I was the last midnight to dawn show for Phil Shaw came and replaced me, and he only lasted a couple of months before they decided to automate. Yes. And what have you. So, my mind's a bit of a muddle, Bevo, but
we're kind of not really going in sequential order of your career, right. We'll just go where the conversation flows. That's what this podcast is all about.
I took over from Minty, who's at 40O these days, Glenn Minton, who was doing
Triple
Nights.
Yeah.
And then, that was a massive promotion going from Dawns to Nights. And I actually did six nights a week. They said you have the option of doing Monday to Friday night and then maybe a weekend afternoon, or you can do Saturday night. And I said, I'll stay with the night. So I became a real night owl and became the request guru. And I really enjoyed it. I made it my thing.
Let's talk about the introduction for you to radio. How did it all start for you? Did you grow up listening to the radio and just, you know, it was like this escapism from doing high school?
I was the idiot in the bedroom with the parents' turntable, slip queuing on a vinyl mat, trying to do a radio station in my bedroom. I became fascinated because I was in Goulburn at the time, a station called 2GN that was a big part of my career. Eagle FM, of course, is part of that stable now through Capital Broadcasters. But I was there, oh, God, would have been very early 80s, 84, 85. The likes of Mike O'Connor were manager. I just came in after Chris Jocelyn had managed. Guys like John Grimm were the program director. Peter Watkins was doing Drive. Brendan Ford was doing Breakfast. I mean, all people outside of the industry. I did go to a 2GN reunion. Must have been well over 10, 11 years ago, and just about everyone had gone out of the industry except for myself and Brian Blacklock, who was still with Wesco at that stage.
Oh,
so,
I remember Brian at ARN in Sydney, yeah.
Yeah, so we were at the bar and we were going, my God, we're the only survivors out of a radio station. That, you know what, I really enjoyed it because seeing a radio station in your local town, there you see the jocks, you know, playing the ads, doing the music, doing all the interviews, and you spoke to them, and all of them were very receptive to a young kid who'd hang around like a bad smell outside the OB. And then when I wanted to do work experience, I managed to get in for a week. And I remember, because I'd been doing some work at the community station there in Goulburn, and I remember the manager saying, oh, this would have been Thursday, my week there. Do you want to go on air between 6 and 7 tonight? I mean, God, hold me back, please. Yeah. The night jock, Maggie Risha was her name, was also doubling as the cleaner to make some extra money at that stage. I thought maybe that's what jocks do to get extra money. And I got on air at 6 o'clock and nervously got through my first hour, and at 7 o'clock she says, "Oh, look, I've got cleaning to do. Do you want to stick around for a bit?" So I ended up being on air till 10 o'clock, and because I'd had a bit of community radio experience, who also had involvement from a few different commercial broadcasters who'd retired, but of course were giving you advice. They sort of knew how to, you know, work my on-air performance to work into a style that would suit commercial radio as it was in the 80s, you know, the big voice and the delivery and what have you. But they saw I was a kid with potential and were encouraging me to go and do some work experience. So I did actually do a radio announcers competition through 2CC Canberra just before I got on that work experience.
Oh, yeah.
And I won it. And through there, became known in the town, and they said, "Look, let's give him a go." And then the next day, this blew me away. The boss and that raw game, "My God, was that you on air last night? Man, you sound good." And this, you know, for a kid, this was wow.
Awesome.
I know. And they said, "Do you want a part time job?" What?
And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, so I ended up doing Friday night panelling Take 40 Australia, then I did Saturday night and Sunday night, so 3 nights a week. So I did that through most of year 12, so I had money. I was getting about $100 a week, which was great.
Yeah.
So that got me through year 12, and then I remember March of my HSC year, this is how bad it was, the manager says, we're at an outside broadcast for the Goulburn Show, I remember, and I was out there doing crosses, and they were thinking, oh, let's get a local on because you know all the people, and it was very easy to do interviews because you knew half the town. They said, "Oh, do you want a job here at the end of school? I mean, are you considering tertiary education?" And I thought, "No, I'm not. I'd love a job." And so we did the handshake deal. Mum and Dad said, hang on, we want it in writing. And I got very stressed. I'm thinking, no, we handshook on it. Yeah, no. Dad says you've got to have it in writing. So they did put it in writing and the salary and everything. And come December, once the HSC finished, I think I went on 2 weeks holiday and then entered radio. And,
oh, wow.
Never look back. I mean, I did take 3 years out, mid-90s, to try out the priesthood, but I did come back when I realised that, you know, you can't fall in love as a Catholic priest. So.
No, that's true.
Kevin
Blyton there back in those days?
Oh, no, this was way before Capital Broadcasters. They were owned by AWA. So,
yes, okay.
You know, they had a whole different set of people who were absorbed, I think, eventually into Wesco and ARN and all that down the track. But, you know, guys like Mike O'Connor, who were still around, were manager at that time. John Grimm. I mean, these are people who are out of the industry now, so I'm not sure if anyone would know their names. But funnily enough, I did get an email from a guy who used to be a 2GN way back in the day, Tony McAdam, who did nights and production there. He actually told me that he's still working in radio at Wave FM Wollongong in sales. So he's still a survivor. I'm impressed.
Wow, that's awesome. So let's just jump forward a little bit here to B104.9. After that, I believe it became the DMG Regional Hub. Is that right?
That's right. It and that sort of happened around me because I, at that stage, I'd done breakfast for about 4 or 5 years and I was really getting jacked, but things were changing. And I said, I'd really just want to get on daytimes. And so I ended up, I think, doing mornings. That's when, at that stage, working with guys like Lars Peterson, who worked with ARN, he was there in Albury at that stage. He moved on and I moved into his morning show, and I pretty much stayed on daytimes in Albury for the rest of my career because that's how I loved it. But funny how the whole DMG Hub thing came about. I still remember working in the old building in Swift Street, Albury, above the bicycle shop there. And all I noticed is suddenly it got a lot quieter and new faces were coming around the building and they were ripping things out, but I was still at my desk using my old computer with, you know, the big box screen and still working on Selector and putting music together. And I said to someone the other day, where's the traffic girls and where's the sales department? And they said, oh, they've moved up to the new building. I said, what new building? No one had sort of informed me about what was going on. And the next... And then one day, because we're just doing our show there and the logs just appeared there and I was doing music, and then I think Dean Pickering, who was PD at that stage, said, oh, mate, from next week, you're going to be working out of the new building, the big hub building where the old newspaper used to be, up in Keywar Street. And I went, okay. So I walked in there and I'm like, God. Walked into from a ramshackle bunch of corridors to a gleaming, shining rack display behind glass that looked like, you know, the Spaceship Enterprise. There were all these office areas. There were studios that were just ultra-modern. I went in there and was blown away and thought, I can't work this. It's like looking at the Starship Enterprise. Can't work this out. And I remember Dean saying to me, oh, mate, just grab a box there. It's got a computer in there. We'll get Selector on and pick an office and you can start working from here. just like that. And then and everything just grew up around us. We got the personalities and talent from all the regional areas, brought them to Albury, and everything was done from there. We were doing the music, we were doing the ads. Over the other side of the station was, you know, 2AY and B104.9 or 104.9 Star FM as it was then. And we're learning about how to network and localize through using Maestro was a big thing. I remember we switched from Wizard for Windows to Maestro. I couldn't believe it. And then suddenly, you have to do local voice tracks for here and local weathers. And I'm going, how do you do all this? But in the end, my working day started around 8 o'clock in the morning. I'd research all the local market information. I was doing a show for three states at that stage, 10 till 2. I get in at 8 o'clock and start laying in the voice tracks, and then 10 o'clock actually jump on air and do the show, working phones and doing the generic bits and pieces. But otherwise, most of the shift was laid in with the localizers via the Maestro setup. So a very early version of networking but sounding local. It was great.
Yeah, like that was a new generation of radio doing the whole network thing. So when did B104.9 become Star FM? Was that when you launched in the new building?
That would have been just before, about 6 months before we suddenly were calling ourselves B104.9 Star FM. Then we eventually dropped the B104.9 and became Star FM 104.9. This was, as I've since discovered, we were starting to mould into the network that was occurring. So, I just got it through a memo. We're now going to be referred to as this. And everyone's thinking, well, what's going on here? But this was part of the encroachment of a network radio. But you know what? Network radio, when it's done well, and something I've always been proud of is being local, even in my network shows. I've always tried to, when I've had to do localise, sound like I live in the town. And I tell you how successful it was. Years ago, when I was broadcasting in Albury, actually it was a couple of occasions, I had an ex-girlfriend of mine ring me and says, ah, so you're in Bendigo these days. Is that where you got to? I'm like, yes. When I was actually at Albury, so she was convinced that I was in Bendigo. My mother was in Port Macquarie for a wedding and was getting her hair done at the hairdressers, and she was mentioning that her son was, getting married and all this sort of stuff. And the girls at the hairdresser were going, oh, yeah, Bilko on the radio is also getting married. And she goes, that's my son. And I couldn't believe it. Suddenly my mum was treated like a celebrity, and they had no idea that I was in Albury and broadcasting to Port Macquarie via, satellite technology at that time. But that's how you do localism well. If you make it sound like you're part of the community and you can make it work, it's a lot of work to do. But I worked hard trying to sound like I was in Mildura or Bendigo or Coffs Harbour or even Port Augusta. It just was, not Port Augusta, Mount Gambier. When you know what's going on and the markets feed you the information, you can do it well.
And from there, you went to a brand new radio station on the Sunshine Coast, didn't you?
Yes, Hot 91 had, I think they'd been on air 18 months at that stage. So I remember being courted in Albury saying, we'd love you to come on up and be part of a brand new station. And I was very worried. I thought, hang on, brand new radio station, hasn't been around long. Will it be around in 2, 5, 10 years? But at that stage, ownership had changed with the station there in Albury. We'd been taken over by RG. DMG, of course, sold, and we're concentrating on their capital city network. And I remember getting a couple of nudges saying, if someone's offering you a chance at a job, because I was quite comfortable in Albury, kids, wife and all that sort of thing, they suggested I should take it. I did knock it back a couple of times until it was impressed upon me that you maybe need to get out. And I went, oh. Okay, so no, look, it was a good move. I came up here, again, having been in Albury for a long time, it was a strange environment finding a place to live. I mean, everyone wanted to come to the coast, but I did settle in. I ended up being on Hot 91 till about November 2007. And even when I walked in the building, Ronnie Stanton, as PD, said, mate, glad you're here because we've just bought The Heat. And we're about to launch a new radio station down the track. And I think they had an idea about maybe in 6 months they were going to do it. And I heard through the grapevine that maybe I was hired to do breakfast on that new entity at one stage. But then in the mix, Jamie Dunn became available. And you're going to go Bilko, Jamie Dunn. Well, he's got such heritage in this market. Why would you go with me? So I ended up staying on Hot 91 till November 2007, we had a guy called Matt Walsh who did leave. He came from a Mix FM previously, and then I jumped into that drive slot locally, and then Prime bought us, and we networked that shift, and then we went local again once Grant Broadcasters bought us, and they dismantled the network, and yeah, it's ended up being a long time, and now a whole life change again about to take place very soon.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've clicked over your 10 years now, haven't you?
Certainly. I'm certainly racked up the long service leave now, so very much looking forward to that. But it's also like starting again, because you've now got to reorient your thinking. You've got to reconnect to the market in a different way. And even though your audience know you in one sense through the drive show, I'm also replacing a very loved breakfast team who've been in the market for 12 years, Nugget and Al. And that's a daunting prospect. Even though you have all the support behind you and buy-in from listeners, you've still got to start again, in effect, Bevo.
Got any tips for upcoming announcers? I know it's a lot harder these days with the less opportunities, but putting together a tight music shift, you're one of the masters of callers. What do you look for when you answer the phones?
Certainly when you get an audience member on, you've got to get them to buy in where you are. So one of the things I always do, and you don't want to sound contrived when you're on air. I do hate radio shows where, hey, give me a call, 1-300-89 whatever, every second break. I jump on usually maybe the start of the show and go, hey, just give me a call if you want to be part of the show. You can call any time. And the idea of doing that is if your callers buy in to what you're doing, because as a solo jock, if you don't have callers, then it's pretty boring. I mean, yes, you can be creative, you can do all your hooks and links, but you've now got computer systems like Zeta that piece together things beautifully. I up until next gen was still paneling by hand through sweepers, but Zeta doesn't allow you to do that anymore, so I've actually had to embrace the technology and learn to segue in a new system. And you know what, it actually does it quite well. I don't know why I persisted doing it manually for all these years. Maybe I'm just too old school. But now when you get a caller on, you just talk to them about what's topical. You could throw some questions at them. Those that want to be part of your show will offer comment anyway. I mean, I like observational interaction from the listener. So I might put something out there like I did today on the radio. Father's Day is coming up. My dad mentioned that years ago as a kid, he rented a car that was the exact make and model of his, just so he could steal the tyres and replace them on his car, and it only cost him $75. So I wanted, I put that story out there, and I said, is your dad cheap too? And I didn't even mention the number. I just put it out there as a question, and my audience know me enough now that if I do put a statement, or even if I say something stupid, they'll actually come in and comment and just be a part of the show organically. And I think that's the best way to get people involved. But you've got to do that through letting them criticize you, letting them be a part of the show. And you've got to let them maybe have a go at you, but certainly don't belittle them, make them the star. And if they actually sound funny, the payoff is they'll go, hey, you know what? My friends are saying to me, oh, I heard you on the show with Bilko the other day. Oh, God, you made him look stupid. Or, man, you were good. That's all you need.
Yeah. That if little bit feel of encouragement.
That's right. If the callers feel comfortable and, they feel that, they're not going to be belittled or put down in any way, they'll keep joining you all the time.
Wow. What a story, Bilko. I've got to ask you, I haven't never asked you this. How did you get the name Bilko? Who awarded you that name?
That came from school, because with a name like Bilokin, and that's how you pronounce it in the Ukrainian, a lot of people couldn't do that. So it was, Billy Can, Pelican's beak can hold more than his belly can.
Yep.
it's just one of those things that came out at school, and it actually stuck around once I worked into radio. I actually started using it very exclusively when I got to Wollongong. Up until then, I'd been Steve Billiken on the radio, but nicknames seem to be the way to go, and it's one of those names that have stuck, and I've been allowed to use through my various metamorphoses in different radio stations. So now it's actually my brand now. So
first time I heard it, I thought it was ripped off that TV show or the movie Sergeant Bilko.
Well, a lot of old timers have said to me, "Oh, you know about Sergeant Bilko, and I knew about Phil Silvers." And of course, when the Steve Martin movie came out in '95, when I was in Wollongong, it became my total show. Bilko Presents Bilko. It was the first big movie I'd done in a market, and I got to drive it with my name, a station using my brand, to come off on the back of a movie I thought was fantastic, and I realised, wow, the power of using that brand. And that's why I've thought. And I keep saying to my kids, because, I mean, my kids are digital natives, and they talk to me about, "Dad, you've got to be a brand. You've got to be able to do this marketing stuff." And I go, "Well, I'm way ahead of your kids. I'm doing it already." And I've just got to keep pursuing it. And that's what I've got to build now. Bilko is a breakfast brand in the Gympie and Cooler Coast area.
Bilko for breakfast. Well, at least it's a B, you know. It kind of works already.
Bilko and Bevo.
Oh, you're putting it out there. I wonder if Ryan's listening to this.
I don't know. Ryan, Bilko and Bevo, does that work?
No, too similar names.
Yeah, okay. Well, the thing is, we look the same. We're chrome domes. We wear glasses. And, I think we have the same fetish for radio things. So I don't know. Except you've got a podcast. I've got a conspiracy theory podcast. And you've got a fanboy podcast. So
give that a plug. What's that all about, your conspiracy theories?
Well, not as bad as the COVID deniers are at the moment, but my conspiracy theories, and I was podcasting back in 2015 before it even became a thing, and I've got them up on a Blurred Truth Facebook page you can pursue. I've chatted to people. I mean, this is the thing. I've done the UFO stuff, the ghost hunters stuff. I haven't really got into government conspiracies because they're too complicated, and who can prove it anyway? I'm just interested in stuff that's weird, like Yowies, or, you know, one of my most famous chats I had was with a man who wrote a book, and he believed he was the soul of a horse in the form of a human, and he still believed even as a human he was a horse. In fact, apparently female horses were giving him the eye all the time, so he had to keep running away from them. Now, a lot of people gave me some negative comments on that and thought, is this guy serious? And I said, well, you know, I treat every subject as serious. I make sure that it's looked at in a fair income way, and I do respect the subject matter. So I don't belittle anyone. I just let them have their thing, and I ask the pointed questions, and we go from there and let the audience decide.
So what's the name of the podcast again?
It's called The Blurred Truth. It's on, I've got a Facebook page set up, and I've also got a Blurred Truth podcast section on the Zinc 96 website. My kids keep saying to me, "Dad, you've got to get on iTunes and YouTube and all that." I'm going, "Yeah, I'll get to it." I said, "No, we'll do it for you, Dad. We'll do it for you." Because apparently that's what you've got to do. You've got to get on those other platforms like Spotify.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what this podcast is, on all of those platforms: iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Yeah, it took a while, but we got there in the end.
I need to learn off you, mate.
I've only just learned thanks to COVID. This has been my little project for a while.
Yeah, well, it's good, mate.
Bilko, thank you so much for joining us on the Radio Fanboy podcast.
My pleasure.
Goodness, you're a man full of stories, that's for sure.
Well, I was excited I finally got to make radio today after 20 years, and now I've made your podcast. I'm actually feeling like someone.
Good to chat finally on the Radio Fanboy podcast.
All right, and good luck with your future endeavours, and may this podcast live long and prosper, mate.
Oh, there you go, Star Trek reference. Nice work. Bilko, everyone.
The Radio Fanboy podcast, hosted by Bevo and produced by Matt Fulton Productions. Dan Hill speaking.